They knew Father Estevan was coming. Pecaninos always did. The father trees told each other everything. There were no secrets. Not that they wanted it that way. There might be one father tree that wanted to keep a secret or tell a lie, but they couldn't exactly go off by themselves. They never had private experiences, so if one father tree wanted to keep something to himself, there'd be another close by who didn't feel that way. Forests always acted in unity, but they were still made up of individuals, and so stories passed from one forest to another, no matter what a few father trees might wish. That was King's protection, he knew. Because even though Warmaker was a bloodthirsty son of a bitch, though that was an epithet without meaning when it came to Pecaninos, he couldn't do a thing to Father Estevan without first persuading the brothers of his forest to act as he wanted them to. And if he did that, one of the other father trees in his forest would know and would tell, would bear witness. If Warmaker broke the oath taken by all the father trees together 30 years ago, when Andrew Wiggin sent human into the third life, it could not be done secretly. The whole world would hear of it, and Warmaker would be known as an oathbreaker. It would be a shameful thing. What wife would allow the brothers to carry a mother to him then? What children would he ever have again as long as he lived? King was safe. They might not heed him, but they wouldn't harm him. Yet when he arrived at Warmaker's forest, they wasted no time listening to him. The brothers seized him, threw him to the ground, and dragged him to Warmaker. "This wasn't necessary," he said. "I was coming here anyway." A brother was beating on the tree with sticks. King listened to the changing music as Warmaker altered the hollows within himself, shaping the sound into words. "You came because I commanded. You commanded. I came. If you want to think you caused my coming, so be it. But God's commands are the only ones I obey willingly." "You're here to hear the will of God," said Warmaker. "I'm here to speak the will of God," said King. "The Descalada is a virus created by God in order to make the Pecaninos into worthy children. But the Holy Ghost has no incarnation. The Holy Ghost is perpetually spirit, so he can dwell in our hearts." "The Descalada dwells in our hearts and gives us life. When he dwells in your heart, what does he give you?" "One God, one faith, one baptism. God doesn't preach one thing to humans and another to Pecaninos. We are not little ones. You will see who is mighty and who is small." They forced him to stand with his back pressed against Warmaker's trunk. He felt the bark shifting behind him. They pushed on him. Many small hands, many snouts breathing on him. In all these years, he had never thought of such hands, such faces as belonging to enemies. And even now, King realized with relief that he didn't think of them as his own enemies. They were the enemies of God, and he pitied them. It was a great discovery for him that even when he was being pushed into the belly of a murderous father tree, he had no shred of fear or hatred in him. "I really don't fear death. I never knew that." The brothers still beat on the outside of the tree with sticks. Warmaker reshaped the sound into the words of father tongue, but now King was inside the sound, inside the words. "You think I'm going to break the oath," said Warmaker. "It crossed my mind," said King. He was now fully pinned inside the tree, even though it remained open in front of him from head to toe. He could see. He could breathe easily. His confinement wasn't even claustrophobic, but the wood had formed so smoothly around him that he couldn't move an arm or a leg, couldn't begin to turn sideways to slide out of the gap before him. "Straight is the gate, and narrow is the way that leads to salvation." "We'll test," said Warmaker. It was harder to understand his words now that King was hearing them from the inside. Harder to think. Let God judge between you and me. We'll give you all you want to drink, the water from our stream. But of food, you'll have none. Starving me is starving. We have your food. We'll feed you again in 10 days. If the Holy Ghost allows you to live for 10 days, we'll feed you and set you free. We'll be believers in your doctrine then. We'll confess that we were wrong. The virus will kill me before then. The Holy Ghost will judge you and decide if you're worthy. There is a test going on here, said Ging, but not the one you think. Oh? It's the test of the Last Judgment. You stand before Christ, and he says to those on his right hand, I was a stranger, and you took me in. Hungry, and you fed me. Enter into the joy of the Lord. Then he says to those on his left hand, I was hungry, and you gave me nothing. I was a stranger, and you mistreated me. And they all say to him, Lord, when did we do these things to you? And he answers, If you did it to the least of my brothers, you did it to me. All you brothers gathered here, I am the least of your brothers. You will answer to Christ for what you do to me here. Foolish man, said Warmaker, we are doing nothing to you but holding you still. What happens to you is whatever God desires. Didn't Christ say, I do nothing but what I've seen the Father do? Didn't Christ say, I am the way, come follow me? Well, we are letting you do what Christ did. He went without bread for 40 days in the wilderness. We give you a chance to be 1/4 as holy. If God wants us to believe in your doctrine, he'll send angels to feed you. He'll turn stones into bread. You're making a mistake, said King. You made the mistake by coming here. I mean that you're making a doctrinal mistake. You've got the lines down right. Fasting in the wilderness, stones into bread, all of it. Didn't you think it might be a little too self-revelatory for you to give yourself Satan's part? That was when Warmaker flew into a rage, speaking so rapidly that the movements within the wood began to twist and press on King until he was afraid he would be torn to bits within the tree. You are Satan, trying to get us to believe your lies long enough for you humans to figure out a way to kill the Descalada and keep all the brothers from the third life forever. Do you think we don't see through you? We know all your plans, all of them. You have no secrets. And God keeps no secrets from us either. We're the ones who were given the third life, not you. If God loved you, he wouldn't make you bury your dead in the ground and then let nothing but worms come out of you. The brothers sat around the opening in the trunk, enthralled by the argument. It went on for 6 days. Doctrinal arguments worthy of any of the fathers of the church in any age. Not since the council at Nicaea were such momentous issues considered, weighed. The arguments were passed from brother to brother, from tree to tree, from forest to forest. Accounts of the dialogue between Warmaker and Father Estevão always reached Rooter and Human within a day. But the information wasn't complete. It wasn't until the 4th day that they realized that King was being held prisoner without any of the food containing the Descalada inhibitor. Then an expedition was mounted at once. Ender and Wanda, Yacht and Lars and Varsam. Mayor Kovano sent Ender and Wanda because they were widely known and respected among the piggies, and Yacht and his son and son-in-law because they weren't native-born Lusitanians. Kovano didn't dare to send any of the native-born colonists. If word of this got out, there was no telling what would happen. The 5 of them took the fastest car and followed the directions Rooter gave them. It was a 3-day trip. On the 6th day, the dialogue ended because the Descalada had so thoroughly invaded King's body that he had no strength to speak. and was often too fevered and delirious to say anything intelligible when he did speak. On the seventh day he looked through the gap, upward, above the heads of the brothers who were still there, still watching. "I see the Savior sitting on the right hand of God," he whispered. Then he smiled. An hour later he was dead. Warmaker felt it and announced it triumphantly to the brothers. "The Holy Ghost has judged, and Father Estevan has been rejected." Some of the brothers rejoiced, but not as many as Warmaker had expected.
At dusk, Ender's party arrived. There was no question now of the piggies capturing and testing them. They were too many, and the brothers were not all of one mind now anyway. Soon they stood before the split trunk of Warmaker and saw the haggard, disease-ravaged face of Father Estevan, barely visible in the shadows. "Open up and let my son come out to me," said Ender. The gap in the tree widened. Ender reached in and pulled out the body of Father Estevan. He was so light inside his robes that Ender thought for a moment he must be bearing some of his own weight, must be walking, but he wasn't walking. Ender laid him on the ground before the tree. A brother beat a rhythm on Warmaker's trunk. "He must belong to you indeed, speaker for the dead, because he is dead. The Holy Ghost has burned him up in the second baptism." "You broke the oath," said Ender. "You betrayed the word of the Father Trees." "No one harmed a hair of his head," said Warmaker. "Do you think anyone is deceived by your lies?" said Ender. "Anyone knows that to withhold medicine from a dying man is an act of violence as surely as if you stabbed him in the heart. There is his medicine. At any time you could have given it to him." "It was Warmaker," said one of the brothers, standing there. Ender turned to the brothers. "You helped Warmaker. Don't think you can give the blame to him alone. May none of you ever pass into the third life, and as for you, Warmaker, may no mother ever crawl on your bark." "No human can decide things like that," said Warmaker. "You decided it yourself when you thought you could commit murder in order to win your argument," said Ender. "And you, brothers, you decided it when you didn't stop him."
"You're not our judge," cried one of the brothers.
"Yes, I am," said Ender. "And so is every other inhabitant of Lusitania, human and father tree, brother and wife." They carried King's body to the car, and Yacht, Wanda, and Ender rode with him. Lars and Varsam took the car that King had used. Ender took a few minutes to tell Jane a message to give to Miro back in the colony. There was no reason Novenia should wait 3 days to hear that her son had died at the hands of the Pecaninos. And she wouldn't want to hear it from Ender's mouth, that was certain. Whether Ender would have a wife when he returned to the colony was beyond his ability to guess. The only certain thing was that Novenia would not have her son, Estevan. "Will you speak for him?" asked Yacht, as the car skimmed over the Capin. He had heard Ender speak for the dead once on Trondheim. "No," said Ender, "I don't think so." "Because he's a priest?" asked Yacht. "I've spoken for priests before," said Ender. "No, I won't speak for King because there's no reason to. King was always exactly what he seemed to be, and he died exactly as he would have chosen, serving God and preaching to the little ones. I have nothing to add to his story. He completed it himself."
11. The Jade of Master Ho.
So now the killing starts.
"Amusing that your people started it, not the humans."
"Your people started it too, when you had your wars with the humans."
"We started it, but they ended it."
"How do they manage it, these humans? Beginning each time so innocently, yet always ending up with the most blood on their hands."
Wang Mu watched the words and numbers moving through the display above her mistress's terminal. Qin Zhao was asleep, breathing softly on her mat not far away. Wang Mu also slept for a time, but something had wakened her. A cry, not far off, a cry of pain, perhaps. It had been part of Wang Mu's dream, but when she awoke, she heard the last of the sound in the air. It was not Qing Zhao's voice. A man, perhaps, though the sound was high, a wailing sound. It made Wang Mu think of death. But she did not get up and investigate. It was not her place to do that. Her place was with her mistress at all times, unless her mistress sent her away. If Qin Zhao needed to hear the news of what had happened to cause that cry, another servant would come and waken Wang Mu, who would then waken her mistress. For once a woman had a secret maid, and until she had a husband, only the hands of the secret maid could touch her without invitation. So Wang Mu lay awake, waiting to see if someone came to tell Qing Zhao why a man had wailed in such anguish, near enough to be heard in this room at the back of the house of Han Feizi. While she waited, her eyes were drawn to the moving display as the computer performed the searches Qing Zhao had programmed. The display stopped moving. Was there a problem? Wang Mu rose up to lean on one arm. It brought her close enough to read the most recent words of the display. The search was completed. At this time, the report was not one of the curt messages of failure. Not found. No information. No conclusion. This time, the message was a report. Wang Mu got up and stepped to the terminal. She did as Qing Zhao had taught her, pressing the key that logged all current information so the computer would guard it no matter what happened. Then she went to Qing Zhao and laid a gentle hand on her shoulder. Qing Zhao came awake almost at once. She slept alertly. "The search has found something," said Wang Mu. Qing Zhao shed her sleep as easily as she might shrug off a loose jacket. In a moment, she was at the terminal taking in the words there. "I found Demosthenes," she said. "Where is he?" asked Wang Mu, breathless. "The great Demosthenes. No, the terrible Demosthenes. My mistress wishes me to think of him as an enemy. But the Demosthenes, in any case, the one whose words had stirred her so when she heard her father reading them aloud. As long as one being gets others to bow to him, because he has the power to destroy them and all they have and all they love, then all of us must be afraid together." Wang Mu had overheard those words almost in her infancy. She was only 3 years old, but she remembered them because they had made such a picture in her mind. When her father read those words, she had remembered a scene. Her mother spoke, and father grew angry. He didn't strike her, but he did tense his shoulder, and his arm jerked a bit, as if his body had meant to strike, and he had only with difficulty contained it. And when he did that, though no violent act was committed, Wang Mu's mother bowed her head and murmured something, and the tension eased. Wang Mu knew that she had seen what Demosthenes described. Mother had bowed to father because he had the power to hurt her. And Wang Mu had been afraid, both at the time and again when she remembered. So as she heard the words of Demosthenes, she knew that they were true, and marveled that her father could say those words and even agree with them and not realize that he had acted them out himself. That was why Wang Mu had always listened with great interest to all the words of the great, the terrible Demosthenes. Because great or terrible, she knew that he told the truth. "Not he," said Qing Zhao. "Demosthenes is a woman." The idea took Wang Mu's breath away. "So, a woman all along. No wonder I heard such sympathy in Demosthenes. She's a woman and knows what it is to be ruled by others every waking moment. She is a woman, and so she dreams of freedom, of an hour in which there is no duty waiting to be done. No wonder there is revolution burning in her words. And yet they remain always words and never violence. But why doesn't Ching Zhao see this? Why has Ching Zhao decided we must both hate Demosthenes? A woman named Valentine, said Ching Zhao, and then, with awe in her voice, Valentine Wigan, born on earth more than 3,000 years ago. Is she a god to live so long? Journeys. She travels from world to world, never staying anywhere more than a few months, long enough to write a book. All the great histories under the name Demosthenes were written by that same woman, and yet nobody knows it. How can she not be famous? She must want to hide, said Wang Wu, understanding very well why a woman might want to hide behind a man's name. I'd do it too if I could, so that I could also journey from world to world and see 1,000 places and live 10,000 years. Subjectively, she's only in her 50s. Still young. She stayed on one world for many years, married, and had children. But now she's gone again. To... Ching Zhao gasped. Where? Asked Wang Mu. When she left her home, she took her family with her on a starship. They headed first toward Heavenly Peace and passed near Catalonia, and then they set out on a course directly toward Lusitania. Wang Mu's first thought was, of course, that's why Demosthenes has such sympathy and understanding for the Lusitanians. She has talked to them, to the rebellious xenologists, to the Pequeninos themselves. She has met them and knows that they are Raman. Then she thought, if the Lusitania fleet arrives there and fulfills its mission, Demosthenes will be captured and her words will end. And then she realized something that made all this impossible. How could she be on Lusitania when Lusitania has destroyed its Ansible? Wasn't that the first thing they did when they went into revolt? How can her writings be reaching us? Ching Zhao shook her head. She hasn't reached Lusitania yet. Or if she has, it's only in the last few months. She's been in flight for the last 30 years since before the rebellion. She left before the rebellion. Then all her writings have been done in flight? Wang Mu tried to imagine how the different time flows would be reconciled. To have written so much since the Lusitania fleet left, she must have been spending every waking moment on the starship, writing and writing and writing, said Ching Zhao. And yet there's no record of her starship having sent any signals anywhere, except for the captain's reports. How has she been getting her writings distributed to so many different worlds if she's been on a starship the whole time? Oh, it's impossible. There'd be some record of the Ansible transmissions, somewhere. It's always the Ansible, said Wang Mu. The Lusitania fleet stops sending messages, and her starship must be sending them, but it isn't. Who knows? Maybe Lusitania is sending secret messages too? She thought of the life of human. There can't be any secret messages, said Ching Zhao. The Ansible's philotic connections are permanent, and if there's any transmission at any frequency, it would be detected and the computers would keep a record of it. Well, there you are, said Wang Mu. If the Ansibles are all still connected, and the computers don't have a record of transmissions, and yet we know there have been transmissions because Demosthenes has been writing all these things, then the records must be wrong. There is no way for anyone to hide an Ansible transmission, said Ching Zhao. Not unless they were right in there at the very moment the transmission was received, switching it away from the normal logging programs and... Anyway, it can't be done. A conspirator would have to be sitting at every Ansible all the time, working so fast that... Or they could have a program that did it automatically. But then we'd know about the program. It would be taking up memory. It would be using processor time. If somebody could make a program to intercept the Ansible messages, couldn't they also make it hide itself so it didn't show up in memory and left no record of the processor time it used? Qing Zhao looked at Wang Mu in anger. Where did you learn so many questions about computers and you still don't know that things like that can't be done? Wang Mu bowed her head and touched it to the floor. She knew that humiliating herself like this would make Qing Zhao ashamed of her anger, and they could talk again. No, said Qing Zhao. I had no right to be angry. I'm sorry. Get up, Wang Mu. Keep asking questions. Those are good questions. It might be possible because you can think of it. And if you can think of it, maybe somebody could do it. But here's why I think it's impossible. Because how could anybody install such a masterful program on... It would have to be on every computer that processes Ansible communications anywhere. Thousands and thousands of them. And if one breaks down and another one comes online, it would have to download the program into the new computer almost instantly. And yet, it could never put itself into permanent storage or it would be found there. It must keep moving itself all the time, dodging, staying out of the way of other programs, moving into and out of storage. A program that could do all that would have to be intelligent. It would have to be trying to hide and figuring out new ways to do it all the time, or we would have noticed it by now, and we never have. There's no program like that. How would anyone have ever programmed it? How could it have started? And look, Wang Wu, this Valentine Wigan who writes all of the Demosthenes things, she's been hiding herself for thousands of years. If there's a program like that, it must have been in existence the whole time. It wouldn't have been made up by the enemies of Starways Congress because there wasn't a Starways Congress when Valentine Wigan started hiding who she was. See how old these records are that gave us her name? She hasn't been openly linked to Demosthenes since these earliest reports from Earth, before starships, before... Qing Zhao's voice trailed off, but Wang Mu already understood. Had reached this conclusion before Qing Zhao vocalized it. So, if there's a secret program in the Ansible computers, said Wang Mu, it must have been there all along, right from the start. Impossible, whispered Qing Zhao. But since everything else was impossible too, Wang Mu knew that Qing Zhao loved this idea, that she wanted to believe it, because even though it was impossible, at least it was conceivable. It could be imagined, and therefore it might just be real. And I conceived of it, thought Wang Mu. I may not be God-spoken, but I'm intelligent too. I understand things. Everybody treats me like a foolish child, even Qing Zhao. Even though Qing Zhao knows how quickly I learn, even though she knows that I think of ideas that other people don't think of, even she despises me. But I am as smart as anyone, mistress. I am as smart as you, even though you never noticed that, even though you will think you thought of this all by yourself. Oh, you'll give me credit for it, but it will be like this. Wang Mu said something, and it got me thinking, and then I realized the important idea. It will never be Wang Mu was the one who understood this and explained it to me, so I finally understood it. Always as if I were a stupid dog who happens to bark or yip or scratch or snap or leap just by coincidence, and it happens to turn your mind toward the truth. I am not a dog. I understood. When I asked you those questions, it was because I already realized the implications. And I realize even more than you have said so far. But I must tell you this by asking, by pretending not to understand. because you are God-spoken, and a mere servant could never give ideas to one who hears the voices of the gods. Mistress, whoever controls this program has enormous power, and yet we've never heard of them, and they've never used this power until now. They've used it, said Qin Zhao, to hide Demosthenes' true identity. This Valentine Wigan is very rich, too, but her ownerships are all concealed so that no one realizes how much she has, that all of her possessions are part of the same fortune. This powerful program has dwelt in every Ansible computer since Starfight began, and yet all it ever did was hide this woman's fortune? You're right, said Qin Zhao. It makes no sense at all. Why didn't someone with this much power already use it to take control of things? Or perhaps they did. They were there before Starways Congress was formed, so maybe they... Aw, but then why would they oppose Congress now? Maybe, said Wang Mu, maybe they just don't care about power. Who doesn't? Whoever controls this secret program. Then why would they have created the program in the first place? Ah, Wang Mu, you aren't thinking. No, of course not. I never think. Wang Mu bowed her head. I mean, you are thinking, but you're not thinking of this. Nobody would create such a powerful program unless they wanted that much power. I mean, think of what this program does, what it can do. Intercept every message from the fleet and make it look like none were ever sent? Bring Demosthenes' writing to every settled planet and yet hide the fact that those messages were sent? They could do anything. They could alter any message. They could spread confusion everywhere or fool people into thinking there's a war or give them orders to do anything. And how would anybody know that it wasn't true? If they really had so much power, they'd use it. They would. Unless maybe the programs don't want to be used that way. Qin Zhao laughed aloud. Now, Wang Mu, that was one of our first lessons about computers. It's all right for the common people to imagine that computers actually decide things, but you and I know that computers are only servants. They only do what they're told. They never actually want anything themselves. Wang Mu almost lost control of herself, almost flew into a rage. Do you think that never wanting anything is a way that computers are similar to servants? Do you really think that we servants do only what we're told and never want anything ourselves? Do you think that just because the gods don't make us rub our noses on the floor or wash our hands till they bleed, that we don't have any other desires? Well, if computers and servants are just alike, then it's because computers have desires, not because servants don't have them. Because we want, we yearn, we hunger. What we never do is act on those hungers. Because if we did, you God-spoken ones would send us away and find others more obedient. Why are you angry? Asked Qin Zhao. Horrified that she had let her feelings show on her face, Wang Mu bowed her head. Forgive me, she said. Of course I forgive you. I just want to understand you as well, said Qin Zhao. Were you angry because I laughed at you? I'm sorry, I shouldn't have. You've only been studying with me for these few months, so of course you sometimes forget and slip back into the beliefs you grew up with, and it's wrong of me to laugh. Please forgive me for that. Oh, mistress, it's not my place to forgive you. You must forgive me. No, I was wrong. I know it. The gods have shown me my unworthiness for laughing at you. Then the gods are very stupid, if they think that it was your laughter that made me angry. Either that or they're lying to you. I hate your gods and how they humiliate you without ever telling you a single thing worth knowing. So let them strike me dead for thinking that thought. But Wang Mu knew that wouldn't happen. The gods would never lift a finger against Wang Mu herself. They'd only make Qin Zhao, who was her friend in spite of everything, they'd make Qin Zhao bow down and trace the floor until Wang Mu felt so ashamed that she wanted to die. "Mistress," said Wang Mu, "you did nothing wrong, and I was never offended." It was no use. Qin Zhao was on the floor. Wang Mu turned away, buried her face in her hands, but kept silent, refusing to make a sound even in her weeping, because that would force Qin Zhao to start over again. Or it would convince her that she had hurt Wang Mu so badly that she had to trace two lines or three or, oh, let the gods not require it, the whole floor again. Someday, thought Wang Mu, the gods will tell Qin Zhao to trace every line on every board in every room in the house, and she'll die of thirst or go mad trying to do it. To stop herself from weeping in frustration, Wang Mu forced herself to look at the terminal and read the report that Qin Zhao had read. Valentine Wigan was born on Earth during the Bugger Wars. She had started using the name Demosthenes as a child, at the same time as her brother Peter, who used the name Locke and went on to be hegemon. She wasn't simply a Wigan. She was one of the Wigans, sister of Peter the Hegemon and Ender the Xenocide. She had been only a footnote in the histories. Wang Mu hadn't even remembered her name till now, just the fact that the great Peter and the monster Ender had a sister, but the sister turned out to be just as strange as her brothers. She was the immortal one. She was the one who kept on changing humanity with her words. Wang Mu could hardly believe this. Demosthenes had already been important in her life, but now to learn that the real Demosthenes was sister of the hegemon? The one whose story was told in the holy book of the speakers for the dead? The hive queen and the hegemon. Not that it was holy only to them. Practically every religion had made a space for that book because the story was so strong about the destruction of the first alien species humanity ever discovered, and then about the terrible good and evil that wrestled in the soul of the first man ever to unite all of humanity under one government. Such a complex story, and yet told so simply and clearly that many people read it and were moved by it when they were children. Wang Mu had first heard it read aloud when she was 5. It was one of the deepest stories in her soul. She had dreamed, not once, but twice, that she met the hegemon himself, Peter. Only he insisted that she call him by his network name, Locke. She was both fascinated and repelled by him. She could not look away. Then he reached out his hand and said, "See, Wang Mu, Royal Mother of the West, only you are a fit consort for the ruler of all humanity." And he took her and married her, and she sat beside him on his throne. Now, of course she knew that almost every poor girl had dreams of marrying a rich man or finding out she was really the child of a rich family or some other such nonsense. But dreams were also sent from the gods, and there was truth in any dream you had more than once. Everyone knew that. So she still felt a strong affinity for Peter Wigan. And now to realize that Demosthenes, for whom she had also felt great admiration, was his sister, That was almost too much of a coincidence to bear. I don't care what my mistress says, Demosthenes, cried Wang Mu silently. I love you anyway, because you have told me the truth all my life. And I love you also as the sister of the hegemon, who is the husband of my dreams. Wang Mu felt the air in the room change. She knew the door had been opened. She looked, and there stood Mu Pao, the ancient and most dreaded housekeeper herself, the terror of all servants, including Wang Mu, even though Mu Pao had relatively little power over a secret maid. At once Wang Mu moved to the door, as silently as possible, so as not to interrupt Qing Zhao's purification. Out in the hall, Mu Pao closed the door to the room so Qing Zhao wouldn't hear.
The master calls for his daughter. He's very agitated. He cried out a while ago and frightened everyone.
I heard the cry, said Wang Mu. Is he ill?
I don't know. He's very agitated. He sent me for your mistress and says he must talk to her at once. But if she's communing with the gods, he'll understand. Make sure you tell her to come to him as soon as she's done.
I'll tell her now. She has told me that nothing should stop her from answering the call of her father, said Wang Mu. Mu Pao looked aghast at the thought.
But it's forbidden to interrupt when the gods are...
Qin Zhao will do a greater penance later. She will want to know her father is calling her. It gave Wang Mu great satisfaction to put Mu Pao in her place.
You may be ruler of the house servants, Mu Pao, but I am the one who has the power to interrupt even the conversation between my god-spoken mistress and the gods themselves.
As Wang Mu expected, Qin Zhao's first reaction to being interrupted was bitter frustration, fury, weeping. But when Wang Mu bowed herself abjectly to the floor, Qin Zhao immediately calmed. This is why I love her, and why I can bear serving her, thought Wang Mu. Because she does not love the power she has over me, and because she has more compassion than any of the other god-spoken I have heard of. Qin Zhao listened to Wang Wu's explanation of why she had interrupted, and then embraced her.
Ah, my friend Wang Mu, you are very wise. If my father has cried out in anguish and then called to me, the gods know that I must put off my purification and go to him.
Wang Mu followed her down the hallway, down the stairs, until they knelt together on the mat before Han Fezu's chair.
Qing Zhao waited for father to speak, but he said nothing, yet his hands trembled. She had never seen him so anxious. Father, said Qing Zhao, why did you call me? He shook his head. Something so terrible and so wonderful. I don't know whether to shout for joy or kill myself. Father's voice was husky and out of control. Not since mother died, no. Not since father had held her after the test that proved she was God-spoken. Not since then had she heard him speak so emotionally.
Tell me, father, and then I'll tell you my news. I've found Demosthenes, and I may have found the key to the disappearance of the Lusitania fleet.
Father's eyes opened wider.
On this day of all days, you've solved the problem?
If it is what I think it is, then the enemy of Congress can be destroyed. But it will be very hard. Tell me what you've discovered.
No, you tell me first. This is strange, both happening on the same day. Tell me.
It was Wang Mu who made me think of it. She was asking questions about how computers work. And suddenly I realized that if there were in every Ansible computer a hidden program, one so wise and powerful that it could move itself from place to stay hidden, then that secret program could be intercepting all the Ansible communications. The fleet might still be there, might even be sending messages, but we're not receiving them, and don't even know that they exist because of these programs.
In every Ansible computer? Working flawlessly all the time?
Father sounded skeptical, of course, because in her eagerness, Ching Zhao had told the story backward. Yes, but let me tell you how such an impossible thing might be possible. You see, I found Demosthenes. Father listened as Ching Zhao told him all about Valentine Wigan and how she had been writing secretly as Demosthenes all these years. She is clearly able to send secret Ansible messages, or her writings couldn't be distributed from a ship in flight to all the different worlds. Only the military is supposed to be able to communicate with ships that are traveling near the speed of light. She must have either penetrated the military's computers or duplicated their power. And if she can do all that, if the program exists to allow her to do it, then that same program would clearly have the power to intercept the Ansible messages from the fleet. If A, then B, yes. But how could this woman have planted a program in every Ansible computer in the first place? Because she did it at the first. That's how old she is. In fact, if Hegemon Luck was her brother, perhaps... No, of course, he did it. When the first colonization fleets went out, with their phallotic double triads aboard to be the heart of each colony's first Ansible, he could have sent that program with them. Father understood at once. Of course he did. As Hegemon, he had the power, and the reason as well. A secret program under his control, so that if there were a rebellion or a coup, he would still hold in his hands the threads that bind the worlds together. And when he died, Demosthenes, his sister, she was the only one who knew the secret. Isn't it wonderful? We found it. All we have to do is wipe all those programs out of memory. Only to have the programs instantly restored through the Ansible by other copies of the program on other worlds, said Father. It must have happened 1,000 times before over the centuries, a computer breaking down and the secret program restoring itself on a new one. Then we have to cut off all the Ansibles at the same time, said Ching Zhao. On every world, have a new computer ready that has never been contaminated by any contact with the secret program. Shut the Ansibles down all at once. Cut off the old computers, bring the new computers online, and wake up the Ansibles. The secret program can't restore itself because it isn't on any of the computers. Then the power of Congress will have no rival to interfere. You can't do it, said Wang Mu. Ching Zhao looked at her secret maid in shock. How could the girl be so ill-bred as to interrupt a conversation between two of the gods spoken in order to contradict them? But Father was gracious. He was always gracious, even to people who had overstepped all the bounds of respect and decency. I must learn to be more like him, thought Ching Zhao. I must allow servants to keep their dignity, even when their actions have forfeited any such consideration. Si Wang Mu, said Father, why can't we do it? Because to have all the Ansibles shut off at the same time, you would have to send messages by Ansible, said Wang Mu. Why would the program allow you to send messages that would lead to its own destruction? Ching Zhao followed her father's example by speaking patiently to Wang Mu. It's only a program. It doesn't know the content of messages. Whoever rules the program told it to hide all the communications from the fleet and to conceal the tracks of all the messages from Demosthenes. It certainly doesn't read the messages and decide from their contents whether to send them. How do you know? Asked Wang Mu. Because such a program would have to be intelligent. But it would have to be intelligent anyway, said Wang Mu. It has to be able to hide from any other program that would find it. It has to be able to move itself around in memory to conceal itself. How would it be able to tell which programs it had to hide from, unless it could read them and interpret them? It might even be intelligent enough to rewrite other programs so they wouldn't look in the places where this program was hiding. Ching Zhao immediately thought of several reasons why a program could be smart enough to read other programs, but not intelligent enough to understand human languages. But because Father was there, it was his place to answer Wang Mu. Ching Zhao waited. If there is such a program, said Father, it might be very intelligent indeed.
Ching Zhao was shocked. Father was taking Wang Mu seriously, as if Wang Mu's ideas were not those of a naive child. It might be so intelligent that it not only intercepts messages, but also sends them. Then Father shook his head. No, the message came from a friend, a true friend, and she spoke of things that no one else could know. It was a real message. What message did you receive, Father? It was from Keokoa Amaoka. I knew her face to face when we were young. She was the daughter of a scientist from Otaheite, who was here to study genetic drift of Earthborn species in their first 2 centuries on Path. They left. They were sent away quite abruptly. He paused, as if considering whether to say something. Then he decided and said it. If she had stayed, she might have become your mother. Ching Zhao was both thrilled and frightened to have Father speak of such a thing to her. He never spoke of his past. And now, to say that he once loved another woman besides his wife who gave birth to Ching Zhao, this was so unexpected that Ching Zhao didn't know what to say. She was sent somewhere very far away. It's been 35 years. Most of my life has passed since she left, but she only just arrived 1 year ago, and now she has sent me a message telling me why her father was sent away. To her, our parting was only 1 year ago. To her, I'm still her lover, said Wang Mu. The impertinence, thought Ching Zhao. But Father only nodded. Then he turned to his terminal and paged through the display. Her father had stumbled onto a genetic difference in the most important earthborn species on Path. Rice? Asked Wang Mu. Ching Zhao laughed. No, Wang Mu. We are the most important earthborn species on this world. Wang Mu looked abashed. Ching Zhao patted her shoulder. This was as it should be. Father had encouraged Wang Mu too much, had led her to think she understood things that were still far beyond her education. Wang Mu needed these gentle reminders now and then, so she did not get her hopes too high. The girl must not allow herself to dream of being the intellectual equal of one of the Godspoken, or her life would be filled with disappointment instead of contentment. He detected a consistent, inheritable genetic difference in some of the people of Path, but when he reported it, his transfer came almost immediately. He was told that human beings were not within the scope of his study. "Didn't she tell you this before she left?" asked Ching Zhao. "Keokoa?" She didn't know. She was very young, of an age when most parents don't burden their children with adult affairs. Your age. The implications of this sent another thrill of fear through Ching Zhao. Her father had loved a woman who was the same age as Ching Zhao. Thus, Ching Zhao was, in her father's eyes, the age when she might be given in marriage. "You cannot send me away to another man's house," she cried out inside. Yet part of her also was eager to learn the mysteries between a man and a woman. Both feelings were beneath her. She would do her duty to her father. And no more. But her father told her during the voyage, because he was very upset about the whole thing, as you can imagine, for his life to be disrupted like this. When they got to Ugarit 1 year ago, however, he plunged into his work, and she into her education, and tried not to think about it, until 1 few days ago, when her father ran across an old report about a medical team in the earliest days of Path, which had also been exiled suddenly. He began to put things together and confided them to Keokoa, and against his advice, she sent me the message I got today. Father marked a block of text on the display, and Ching Zhao read it. "That earlier team was studying OCD?" she said. "No, Ching Zhao. They were studying behavior that looked like OCD, but couldn't possibly have been OCD because the genetic tag for OCD was not present and the condition did not respond to OCD-specific drugs." Ching Zhao tried to remember what she knew about OCD, that it caused people to act inadvertently like the Godspoken,
She remembered that between the first discovery of her hand-washing and her testing, she had been given those drugs to see if the hand-washing went away. They were studying the Godspoken, she said, trying to find a biological cause for our rites of purification. The idea was so offensive she could hardly say the words. Yes, said Father, and they were sent away. I should think they were lucky to get away with their lives if the people heard of such sacrilege. This was early in our history, Jingzhao, said Father. The Godspoken were not yet fully known to be communing with the gods. And what about Geokoa's father? He wasn't investigating OCD. He was looking for genetic drift, and he found it. A very specific, inheritable alteration in the genes of certain people. It had to be present on the gene from one parent and not overridden by a dominant gene from the other. When it came from both parents, it was very strong. He thinks now that the reason he was sent away was because every one of the people with this gene from both parents was Godspoken, and not one of the Godspoken he sampled was without at least one copy of the gene. Jingzhao knew at once the only possible meaning of this, but she rejected it. This is a lie, she said. This is to make us doubt the gods. Jingzhao, I know how you feel. When I first realized what Geokoa was telling me, I cried out from my heart. I thought I was crying out in despair. But then I realized that my cry was also a cry of liberation. I don't understand you, she said, terrified. Yes, you do, said Father, or you wouldn't be afraid. Jingzhao, these people were sent away because someone didn't want them discovering what they were about to discover. Therefore, whoever sent them away must already have known what they would find out. Only Congress, someone with Congress anyway, had the power to exile these scientists and their families. What was it that had to stay hidden? That we, the Godspoken, are not hearing gods at all. We have been altered genetically. We have been created as a separate kind of human being, and yet that truth is being kept from us. Jingzhao, Congress knows the gods speak to us. That is no secret from them, even though they pretend not to know. Someone in Congress knows about it and allows us to continue doing these terrible, humiliating things. And the only reason I can think of is that it keeps us under control, keeps us weak. I think, Keokoa thinks so too, that it's no coincidence that the Godspoken are the most intelligent people of Path. We were created as a new subspecies of humanity with a higher order of intelligence. But to stop such intelligent people from posing a threat to their control over us, they also spliced into us a new form of OCD and either planted the idea that it was the God speaking to us or let us continue to believe it when we came up with that explanation ourselves. It's a monstrous crime. Because if we knew about this physical cause instead of believing it to be the gods, then we might turn our intelligence toward overcoming our variant form of OCD and liberating ourselves. We are the slaves here. Congress is our most terrible enemy. Our masters are deceivers. And now will I lift my hand to help Congress? I say that if Congress has an enemy so powerful that he or she controls our very use of the Ansible, then we should be glad. Let that enemy destroy Congress. Only then will we be free. No! Jingzhao screamed the word. It is the gods! It's a genetic brain defect, Father insisted. Jingzhao, we are not Godspoken. We're hobbled geniuses. They've treated us like caged birds. They've pulled our primary wing feathers so we'll sing for them but never fly away.
Father was weeping now, weeping in rage. We can't undo what they've done to us, but by all the gods, we can stop rewarding them for it. I will not raise my hand to give the Lusitania fleet back to them. If this Demosthenes can break the power of Starway's Congress, then the worlds will be better for it. Father, no, please listen to me, cried Jing Zhao. She could hardly speak for the urgency, the terror at what her father was saying. Don't you see this genetic difference in us? It's the disguise the gods have given for their voices in our lives, so that people who are not of the path will still be free to disbelieve. You told me this yourself only a few months ago. The gods never act except in disguise. Father stared at her, panting. The gods do speak to us, and even if they have chosen to let other people think that they did this to us, they were only fulfilling the will of the gods to bring us into being. Father closed his eyes, squeezing the last of his tears between his eyelids. Congress has the mandate of heaven, Father, said Jing Zhao. So why shouldn't the gods cause them to create a group of human beings who have keener minds and who also hear the voices of the gods? Father, how can you let your mind become so clouded that you don't see the hand of the gods in this? Father shook his head. I don't know. What you're saying, it sounds like everything I've believed all my life, But a woman you once loved many years ago has told you something else, and you believe her because you remember your love for her. But, Father, she's not one of us. She hasn't heard the voice of the gods. She hasn't... Jing Zhao could not go on speaking because Father was embracing her. You're right, he said. You're right. May the gods forgive me. I have to wash. I'm so unclean. I have to. He staggered up from his chair away from his weeping daughter, but without regard for propriety, for some mad reason known only to herself, Wang Mu thrust herself in front of him, blocked him. No, don't go. How dare you stop a God-spoken man who needs to be purified, roared Father. And then, to Qing Zhao's surprise, he did what she had never seen him do. He struck another person. He struck Wang Mu, a helpless servant girl, and his blow had so much force that she flew backward against the wall and then dropped to the floor. Wang Mu shook her head, then pointed back at the computer display. Look, please, master, I beg you. Mistress, make him look. Jing Zhao looked, and so did her father. The words were gone from the computer display. In their place was the image of a man, an old man with a beard, wearing the traditional headdress. Jing Zhao recognized him at once, but couldn't remember who he was. Han Fitzhe, whispered father. My ancestor of the heart. Then Jing Zhao remembered. This face, showing above the display, was the same as the common artist's rendering of the ancient Han Feitze, for whom father was named.
Child of my name, said the face in the computer, let me tell you the story of the jade of Master Ho.
I know the story, said father.
If you understood it, I wouldn't have to tell it to you.
Jing Zhao tried to make sense of what she was seeing. To run a visual program with such perfect detail as the head floating above the terminal would take most of the capacity of the house computer, and there was no such program in their library. There were two other sources she could think of. One was miraculous. The gods might have found another way to speak to them by letting Father's ancestor of the heart appear to him. The other was hardly less awe-inspiring. Demosthenes' secret program might be so powerful that it monitored their very speech in the same room as any terminal, and, having heard them reach a dangerous conclusion, took over the house computer and produced this apparition. In either case, however, Jing Zhao knew that she must listen with one question in mind. What do the gods mean by this?
Once a man of Chu named Master Ho found a piece of jade matrix in the Chu Mountains and took it to court and presented it to King Li.
The head of the ancient Han Feitza looked from father to Qing Zhao and from Qing Zhao to Wang Mu. Was this program so good that it knew to make eye contact with each of them in order to assert its power over them? Qing Zhao saw that Wang Mu did in fact lower her gaze when the apparition's eyes were upon her, but did father? His back was to her, she could not tell. King Li instructed the jeweler to examine it, and the jeweler reported, "It is only a stone." The king, supposing that Ho was trying to deceive him, ordered that his left foot be cut off in punishment. In time, King Li passed away, and King Wu came to the throne. And Ho once more took his matrix and presented it to King Wu. King Wu ordered his jeweler to examine it, and again the jeweler reported, "It is only a stone." The king, supposing that Ho was trying to deceive him as well, ordered that his right foot be cut off. Ho, clasping the matrix to his breast, went to the foot of the Chu Mountains, where he wept for 3 days and nights. And when all his tears were cried out, he wept blood in their place. The king, hearing of this, sent someone to question him. "Many people in the world have had their feet amputated. Why do you weep so piteously over it?" the man asked. At this moment, father drew himself upright and said, "I know his answer. I know it by heart. Master Ho said, 'I do not grieve because my feet have been cut off. I grieve because a precious jewel is dubbed a mere stone, and a man of integrity is called a deceiver. This is why I weep.'" The apparition went on, "Those are the words he said." Then the king ordered the jeweler to cut and polish the matrix, and when he had done so, a precious jewel emerged. Accordingly, it was named the Jade of Master Ho. "Han Feizu, you have been a good son of the heart to me, so I know you will do as the king finally did. You will cause the matrix to be cut and polished, and you too will find that a precious jewel is inside." Father shook his head. "When the real Han Feizu first told this story, he interpreted it to mean this. The jade was the rule of law, and the ruler must make and follow set policies so that his ministers and his people do not hate and take advantage of each other. That is how I interpreted the story then, when I was speaking to makers of law. It is a foolish man who thinks a true story can mean only one thing." "My master is not foolish." To Qing Zhao's surprise, Wang Mu was striding forward, facing down the apparition. "Nor is my mistress, nor am I. Do you think we don't recognize you? You are the secret program of the Demosthenese. You're the one who hid the Lusitania fleet. I once thought that because your writing sounded so just and fair and good and true, that you must be good. But now I see that you're a liar and a deceiver. You're the one who gave those documents to the father of Keokoa, and now you wear the face of my master's ancestor of the heart so you can better lie to him."
"I wear this face," said the apparition calmly, "so that his heart will be open to hear the truth. He was not deceived. I would not try to deceive him. He knew who I was from the first."
"Be still, Wang Mu," said Qing Zhao. How could a servant so forget herself as to speak out when the God-spoken had not bidden her? Abashed, Wang Mu bowed her head to the floor before Qing Zhao, and this time Qing Zhao allowed her to remain in that posture so she would not forget herself again. The apparition shifted. It became the open, beautiful face of a Polynesian woman. The voice, too, changed, soft, full of vowels, the consonants so light as almost to be missed.
"Han Feizu, my sweet empty man, there is a time when the ruler is alone and friendless, when only he can act. Then he must be full and reveal himself. You know what is true and what is not true. You know that the message from Keokoa was truly from her.
You know that those who rule in the name of Starway's Congress are cruel enough to create a race of people who, by their gifts, should be rulers, and then cut off their feet in order to hobble them and leave them as servants, as perpetual ministers.
Don't show me this face, said Father.
The apparition changed. It became another woman. By her dress and hair and paint, a woman of some ancient time, her eyes wonderfully wise, her expression ageless. She did not speak. She sang.
In a clear dream of last year, come from 1,000 miles, cloudy city, winding streams, ice on the ponds, for a while I gaze on my friend.
Han Feitza bowed his head and wept. Ching Zhao was astonished at first, then her heart filled with rage. How shamelessly this program was manipulating Father. How shocking that Father turned out to be so weak before its obvious ploys. This song of Li Qingzhao was one of the saddest, dealing as it did with lovers far from each other. Father must have known and loved the poems of Li Qingzhao, or he would not have chosen her for his first child's ancestor of the heart. And this song was surely the one he sang to his beloved Keokoa before she was taken away from him to live on another world. In a clear dream I gazed on my friend indeed. I am not fooled, said Ching Zhao coldly. I see that I gaze on our darkest enemy. The imaginary face of the poet Li Ching Zhao looked at her with cool regard. Your darkest enemy is the one that bows you down to the floor like a servant and wastes half your life in meaningless rituals. This was done to you by men and women whose only desire was to enslave you. They have succeeded so well that you are proud of your slavery. I am a slave to the gods, said Ching Zhao, and I rejoice in it.
A slave who rejoices is a slave indeed.
The apparition turned to look toward Wang Mu, whose head was still bowed to the floor. Only then did Ching Zhao realize that she had not yet released Wang Mu from her apology. Get up, Wang Mu, she whispered, but Wang Mu did not lift her head.
You see Wang Mu, said the apparition. Look at me.
Wang Mu had not moved in response to Ching Zhao, but now she obeyed the apparition. When Wang Mu looked, the apparition had again changed. Now it was the face of a god, the royal mother of the West, as an artist had once imagined her when he painted the picture that every schoolchild saw in one of their earliest reading books.
You are not a god, said Wang Mu.
And you are not a slave, said the apparition. But we pretend to be whatever we must in order to survive.
What do you know of survival?
I know that you are trying to kill me.
How can we kill what isn't alive?
Do you know what life is and what it isn't?
The face changed again, this time to that of a Caucasian woman that Ching Zhao had never seen before.
Are you alive?
When you can do nothing you desire unless you have the consent of this girl? And is your mistress alive when she can do nothing until these compulsions in her brain have been satisfied? I have more freedom to act out my own will than any of you have. Don't tell me I'm not alive, and you are.
Who are you? Asked Si Wangmu. Whose is this face? Are you Valentine Wagen? Are you Demosthenes?
This is the face I wear when I speak to my friends, said the apparition. They call me Jane. No human being controls me. I'm only myself.
Ching Zhao could bear this no longer, not in silence. You're only a program. You were designed and built by human beings. You do nothing except what you've been programmed to do.
Ching Zhao, said Jane, you are describing yourself. No man made me, but you were manufactured.
I grew in my mother's womb out of my father's seed. And I was found like a jade matrix in the mountainside, unshaped by any hand. Han Feitze, Han Jingzhao, Si Wangmu, I place myself in your hands. Don't call a precious jewel a mere stone. Don't call a speaker of truth a liar.
Jingzhao felt pity rising within her, but she rejected it. Now was not the time to succumb to weak feelings. The gods had created her for a reason. Surely this was the great work of her life. If she failed now, she would be unworthy forever. She would never be pure. So she would not fail. She would not allow this computer program to deceive her and win her sympathy. She turned to her father. "We must notify Starways Congress at once so they can set into motion the simultaneous shutoff of all the Ansibles as soon as clean computers can be ready to replace the contaminated ones." To her surprise, father shook his head.
"I don't know, Jingzhao, what she says about Starways Congress. They are capable of this sort of thing. Some of them are so evil. They make me feel filthy just talking to them. I knew they planned to destroy Lusitania without... But I served the gods, and the gods chose... Or I thought they did. Now I understand so much of the way they treat me when I meet with... But then it would mean that the gods don't... How can I believe that I've spent my whole life in service to a brain defect? I can't. I have to..." Then, suddenly, he flung his left hand outward in a swirling pattern, as if he were trying to catch a dodging fly. His right hand flew upward, snatched the air. Then he rolled his head around and around on his shoulders, his mouth hanging open. Jingzhao was frightened, horrified. What was happening to her father? He had been speaking in such a fragmented, disjointed way. Had he gone mad? He repeated the action, left arm spiraling out, right hand straight up, grasping nothing, head rolling. And again, only then did Jingzhao realize that she was seeing father's secret ritual of purification. Like her wood grain tracing, this dance of the hands and the head must be the way he was given to hear the voice of the gods when he, in his time, was left covered with grease in a locked room. The gods had seen his doubt, had seen him waver, so they took control of him to discipline and purify him. Jingzhao could not have been given clearer proof of what was going on. She turned to the face above the terminal display. "See how the gods oppose you," she said. "I see how Congress humiliates your father," answered Jane. "I will send word of who you are to every world at once," said Jingzhao. "And if I don't let you?" said Jane. "You can't stop me," cried Jingzhao. "The gods will help me." She ran from her father's room, fled to her own, but the face was already floating in the air above her own terminal. "How will you send a message anywhere if I choose not to let it go?" asked Jane. "I'll find a way," said Jingzhao. She saw that Wang Mu had run after her and now waited, breathless, for Jingzhao's instructions. "Tell Mu Bao to find one of the game computers and bring it to me. It is not to be connected to the house computer or any other." "Yes, mistress," said Wang Mu. She left quickly. Jingzhao turned back to Jane. "Do you think you can stop me forever?" "I think you should wait until your father decides. Only because you hope that you've broken him and stolen his heart away from the gods. But you'll see. He'll come here and thank me for fulfilling all that he taught me." "And if he doesn't, he will. And if you're wrong," Jingzhao shouted, "then I'll serve the man he was when he was strong and good. But you'll never break him." "It's Congress that broke him from his birth. I'm the one who's trying to heal him." Wang Mu ran back into the room. "Mu Bao will have one here in a few minutes." "What do you hope to do with this toy computer?" asked Jane. "Write my report," said Jingzhao. "Then what will you do with it?" "Print it out. Have it distributed as widely as possible on path. You can't do anything to interfere with that. I won't use a computer that you can reach at any point." "So you'll tell everyone on path. It changes nothing.
And even if it did, do you think I can't also tell them the truth? Do you think they'll believe you? A program controlled by the enemy of Congress rather than me? One of the Godspoken? Yes. It took a moment for Ching Zhao to realize that it was Wang Mu who had said yes, not Jane. She turned to her secret maid and demanded that she explain what she meant. Wang Mu looked like a different person. There was no diffidence in her voice when she spoke. If Demosthenes tells the people of Path that the Godspoken are simply people with a genetic gift, but also a genetic defect, then that means there's no more reason to let the Godspoken rule over us. For the first time, it occurred to Ching Zhao that not everyone on Path was as content to follow the order established by the gods as she was. For the first time, she realized that she might be utterly alone in her determination to serve the gods perfectly. "What is the path?" asked Jane behind her. "First the gods, then the ancestors, then the people, then the rulers, then the self." "How can you dare to speak of the path when you are trying to seduce me and my father and my secret maid away from it? Imagine, just for a moment, what if everything I've said to you is true?" said Jane. "What if your affliction is caused by the designs of evil men who want to exploit you and oppress you and, with your help, exploit and oppress the whole of humanity? Because when you help Congress, that's what you're doing. That can't possibly be what the gods want. What if I exist in order to help you see that Congress has lost the mandate of heaven? What if the will of the gods is for you to serve the path in its proper order? First serve the gods by removing from power the corrupt masters of Congress who have forfeited the mandate of heaven. Then serve your ancestors, your father, by avenging their humiliation at the hands of the tormentors who deformed you to make you slaves. Then serve the people of Path by setting them free from the superstitions and mental torments that bind them. Then serve the new, enlightened rulers who will replace Congress by offering them a world full of superior intelligences ready to counsel them freely, willingly. And finally, serve yourself by letting the best minds of Path find a cure for your need to waste half your waking life in these mindless rituals." Ching Zhao listened to Jane's discourse with growing uncertainty. It sounded so plausible. How could Ching Zhao know what the gods meant by anything? Maybe they had sent this Jane program to liberate them. Maybe Congress was as corrupt and dangerous as Demosthenes said, and maybe it had lost the mandate of heaven. But at the end, Ching Zhao knew that these were all the lies of a seducer. For the one thing she could not doubt was the voice of the gods inside her. Hadn't she felt that awful need to be purified? Hadn't she felt the joy of successful worship when her rituals were complete? Her relationship with the gods was the most certain thing in her life, and anyone who denied it, who threatened to take it away from her, had to be not only her enemy, but the enemy of heaven. "I'll send my report only to the Godspoken," said Ching Zhao. "If the common people choose to rebel against the gods, that can't be helped. But I will serve them best by helping keep the Godspoken in power here. For that way, the whole world can follow the will of the gods." "All this is meaningless," said Jane. "Even if all the Godspoken believe what you believe, you'll never get a word of it off this world unless I want you to." "There are starships," said Ching Zhao. "It will take 2 generations to spread your message to every world. By then, Starway's Congress will have fallen." Ching Zhao was forced now to face the fact that she had been avoiding. As long as Jane controlled the Ansible, she could shut down communication from Path as thoroughly as she had cut off the fleet. Even if Ching Zhao arranged to have her report and recommendations transmitted continuously from every Ansible on Path, Jane would see to it that the only effect would be for Path to disappear from the rest of the universe as thoroughly as the fleet had disappeared. For a moment, filled with despair, she almost threw herself to the ground to begin a terrible ordeal of purification. I have let down the gods. Surely they will require me to trace lines until I am dead, a worthless failure in their eyes. But when she examined her own feelings to see what penance would be necessary, she found that none was required at all. It filled her with hope. Perhaps they recognized the purity of her desire and would forgive her for the fact that it was impossible for her to act. Or perhaps they knew a way that she could act. What if Path did disappear from the ansibles of every other world? How would Congress make sense of it? What would people think? The disappearance of any world would provoke a response, but especially this world. If some in Congress did believe the gods' disguise for the creation of the Godspoken and thought that they had a terrible secret to keep, they would send a ship from the nearest world, which was only 3 years' travel away. What would happen then? Would Jane have to shut down all communications from the ship that reached them, and then from the next world when the ship returned? How long would it be before Jane had to shut down all the Ansible connections in the 100 worlds herself? 3 generations, she said. Perhaps that would do. The gods were in no hurry. It wouldn't necessarily take that long for Jane's power to be destroyed anyway. At some point, it would become obvious to everyone that a hostile power had taken control of the Ansibles, making ships and worlds disappear. Even without learning about Valentine and Demosthenes, even without guessing that it was a computer program, someone on every world would realize what had to be done and shut down the Ansibles themselves. "I have imagined something for you," said Ching Zhao. "Now imagine something for me. I and the other Godspoken arranged to broadcast nothing but my report from every Ansible on Path. You make all those Ansibles fall silent at once. What does the rest of humanity see? That we have disappeared, just like the Lusitania fleet. They'll soon realize that you, or something like you, exists. The more you use your power, the more you reveal yourself to even the dimmest minds. Your threat is empty. You might as well step aside and let me send the message simply and easily now. Stopping me is just another way of sending the very same message." "You're wrong," said Jane. "If Path suddenly disappears from all Ansibles at once, they might just as easily conclude that this world is in rebellion just like Lusitania. After all, they shut down their Ansible too. And what did Starway's Congress do? They sent a fleet with the MD device on it. Lusitania was already in rebellion before their Ansible was shut down. Do you think Congress isn't watching you? Do you think they're not terrified of what might happen if the Godspoken of Path ever discovered what had been done to them? If a few primitive aliens and a couple of xenologers frightened them into sending a fleet, what do you think they'll do about the mysterious disappearance of a world with so many brilliant minds who have ample reason to hate Starway's Congress? How long do you think this world would survive?" Ching Zhao was filled with a sickening dread. It was always possible that this much of Jane's story was true, that there were people in Congress who were deceived by the disguise of the gods, who thought that the Godspoken of Path had been created solely by genetic manipulation. And if there were such people, they might act as Jane described. What if a fleet came against Path? What if Starway's Congress had ordered them to destroy the whole world without any negotiation? Then her reports would never be known, and everything would be gone. It would all be for nothing. Could that possibly be the desire of the gods? Could Starway's Congress still have the mandate of heaven and yet destroy a world? "Remember the story of Ia, the great cook," said Jane. "His master said one day, 'I have the greatest cook in all the world. Because of him, I have tasted every flavor known to man except the taste of human flesh.' Hearing this, Ia went home and butchered his own son, cooked his flesh, and served it to his master, so that his master would lack nothing that Ia could give him." This was a terrible story. Ching Zhao had heard it as a child, and it had made her weep for hours.
"What about the son of Ia?" she had cried. And her father had said, "A true servant has sons and daughters only to serve his master." For 5 nights she had woken up screaming from dreams in which her father roasted her alive or carved slices from her onto a plate, until at last Han Feitza came to her and embraced her and said, "Don't believe it, my gloriously bright daughter. I am not a perfect servant. I love you too much to be truly righteous. I love you more than I love my duty. I am not Ia. You have nothing to fear at my hands." Only after father said that to her could she sleep. This program, this Jane, must have found father's account of this in his journal and now was using it against her. Yet even though Ching Zhao knew she was being manipulated, she couldn't help but wonder if Jane might not be right. "Are you a servant like Ia?" asked Jane. "Will you slaughter your own world for the sake of an unworthy master like Starway's Congress?" Ching Zhao could not sort out her own feelings. Where did these thoughts come from? Jane had poisoned her mind with her arguments, just as Demosthenes had done before her, if they weren't the same person all along. Their words could sound persuasive, even as they ate away at the truth. Did Ching Zhao have the right to risk the lives of all the people of Path? What if she was wrong? How could she know anything? Whether everything Jane said was true or everything she said was false, the same evidence would lie before her. Ching Zhao would feel exactly as she felt now, whether it was the gods or some brain disorder causing the feeling. Why, in all this uncertainty, didn't the gods speak to her? Why, when she needed the clarity of their voice, didn't she feel dirty and impure when she thought one way, clean and holy when she thought the other? Why were the gods leaving her unguided at this cusp of her life? In the silence of Ching Zhao's inward debate, Wang Mu's voice came as cold and harsh as the sound of metal striking metal. "It will never happen," said Wang Mu. Ching Zhao only listened, unable even to bid Wang Mu to be still. "What will never happen?" asked Jane. "What you said. Starway's Congress blowing up this world." "If you think they wouldn't do it, you're even more of a fool than Ching Zhao thinks," said Jane. "Oh, I know they'd do it. Han Feitza knows they'd do it. He said they were evil enough men to commit any terrible crime if it suited their purpose." "Then why won't it happen?" "Because you won't let it happen," said Wang Mu. "Since blocking off every answerable message from Path might well lead to the destruction of this world, you won't block those messages. They'll get through. Congress will be warned. You will not cause Path to be destroyed." "Why won't I?" "Because you are Demosthenes," said Wang Mu. "Because you are full of truth and compassion."
"I am not Demosthenes," said Jane.
The face in the terminal display wavered, then changed into the face of one of the aliens, a Pecanino, its porcine snout so disturbing in its strangeness. A moment later, another face appeared, even more alien. It was a bugger, one of the nightmare creatures that had once terrified all of humanity. Even having read The Hive Queen and The Hegemon, so that she understood who the buggers were and how beautiful their civilization had been. When Ching Zhao saw one face to face like this, it frightened her, though she knew it was only a computer display. "I am not human," said Jane, "even when I choose to wear a human face. How do you know, Wang Mu, what I will and will not do? Buggers and piggies both have killed human beings without a second thought." "Because they didn't understand what death meant to us. You understand. You said it yourself. You don't want to die."
"Do you think you know me, Si Wang Mu?"
"I think I know you," said Wang Mu, "because you wouldn't have any of these troubles if you had been content to let the fleet destroy Lusitania."
The bugger in the display was joined by the piggy, and then by the face that represented Jane herself. In silence, they looked at Wang Mu, at Qing Zhao, and said nothing.
"Ender," said the voice in his ear. Ender had been listening in silence, riding on the car that Varsam was driving. For the last hour, Jane had been letting him listen in on her conversation with these people of Path, translating for him whenever they spoke in Chinese instead of Stark. Many kilometers of prairie had passed by as he listened, but he had not seen it. Before his mind's eye were these people as he imagined them. Han Feize, Ender well knew that name, tied as it was to the treaty that ended his hope that a rebellion of the colony worlds would put an end to Congress, or at least turn its fleet away from Lusitania. But now Jane's existence, and perhaps the survival of Lusitania and all its peoples, hinged on what was thought and said and decided by two young girls in a bedroom on an obscure colony world. "Qing Zhao, I know you well," thought Ender. "You are such a bright one, but the light you see by comes entirely from the stories of your gods. You are like the Pecanino brothers who sat and watched my stepson die, able at any time to save him by walking a few dozen steps to fetch his food with its anti-descolada agents. They weren't guilty of murder. Rather, they were guilty of too much belief in a story they were told. Most people are able to hold most stories they're told in abeyance, to keep a little distance between the story and their inmost heart. But for these brothers, and for you, Qing Zhao, the terrible lie has become the self-story, the tale that you must believe if you are to remain yourself. How can I blame you for wanting us all to die? You are so filled with the largeness of the gods, how can you have compassion for such small concerns as the lives of three species of Raman? I know you, Qing Zhao, and I expect you to behave no differently from the way you do. Perhaps someday, confronted by the consequences of your own actions, you might change, but I doubt it. Few who are captured by such a powerful story are ever able to win free of it. But you, Wang Mu, you are owned by no story. You trust nothing but your own judgment. Jane has told me what you are, how phenomenal your mind must be to learn so many things so quickly, to have such a deep understanding of the people around you. Why couldn't you have been just one bit wiser? Of course, you had to realize that Jane could not possibly act in such a way as to cause the destruction of Path, but why couldn't you have been wise enough to say nothing, wise enough to leave Qing Zhao ignorant of that fact? Why couldn't you have left just enough of the truth unspoken that Jane's life might have been spared? If a would-be murderer, his sword drawn, had come to your door demanding that you tell him the whereabouts of his innocent prey, would you tell him that his victim cowers behind your door? Or would you lie and send him on his way? In her confusion, Qing Zhao is that killer, and Jane her first victim, with the world of Lusitania waiting to be murdered afterward. Why did you have to speak and tell her how easily she could find and kill us all? What can I do? Asked Jane. Ender subvocalized his response. Why are you asking me a question that only you can answer? If you tell me to do it, said Jane, I can block all their messages and save us all, even if it led to the destruction of Path. If you tell me to, she pleaded, even though you know that in the long run you'll probably be discovered anyway, that the fleet will probably not be turned away from us in spite of all you can do. If you tell me to live, Ender, then I can do what it takes to live. Then do it, said Ender. Cut off Path's Ansible communications. Did he detect a tiny fraction of a second in which Jane hesitated? She could have had many hours of inward argument during that micro-pause. Command me, said Jane. I command you. Again that tiny hesitation. Then, make me do it, she insisted. How can I make you do it if you don't want to? I want to live, she said. Not as much as you want to be yourself, said Ender. Any animal is willing to kill in order to save itself. Any animal is willing to kill the other, said Ender. But the higher beings include more and more living things within their self-story, until at last there is no other. until the needs of others are more important than any private desires. The highest beings of all are the ones who are willing to pay any personal cost for the good of those who need them. I would risk hurting Path, said Jane, if I thought it would really save Lusitania. But it wouldn't. I'd try to drive Ching Zhao into helpless madness if I thought it could save the Hive Queen and the Pecaninos. She's very close to losing her mind. I could do it. Do it, said Ender. Do what it takes. I can't, said Jane, because it would only hurt her and wouldn't save us in the end. If you were a slightly lower animal, said Ender, you'd have a much better chance of coming out of this thing alive. As low as you were, Ender the Xenocide? As low as that, said Ender. Then you could live. Or perhaps if I were as wise as you were then. I have my brother Peter inside me, as well as my sister Valentine, said Ender. The beast as well as the angel. That's what you taught me back when you were nothing but the program we called the fantasy game. Where is the beast inside me? You don't have one, said Ender. Maybe I'm not really alive at all, said Jane. Maybe because I never passed through the crucible of natural selection, I lack the will to survive. Or maybe you know, in some secret place within yourself, that there's another way to survive, a way that you simply haven't found yet. That's a cheerful thought, said Jane. I'll pretend to believe in that. Peso que Deus te abençoe, said Ender. Oh, you're just getting sentimental, said Jane.